This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You're here with Love Our Proud
with Z and G on Joy 94.9. We're joined by a very special guest comedian, Simon Taylor. How are we today, Simon?
I'm great. Thanks for having me in.
Thank you so much for coming down this late at night. I mean, I know it's, you know, it is about probably like, you know, 12:30 at night.
It's getting tricky to come down on this late at night, and we appreciate you coming down. And
no, look, it's fine. I've just had breakfast, so I'm ready to roll.
Well, awesome.
Look, I'm glad you're just ready to rock and roll. And we saw you downstairs, and we thought, why not bring up Simon? You know, why not bring up Simon and just have a chat? Because you've done a lot of stuff. I mean, are you a Melbourne-born comic?
I am a Melbourne-born comic. Right. That's why you found me downstairs. I was just floating around.
Just floating around in Melbourne.
Trying to get home. Yeah.
But I mean, so you got into comedy in Melbourne?
Yes, this is where I started. Okay. This is the scene I started in.
So how far back are we talking here?
Oh, I don't know. 7 years ago.
Nice.
Years ago, I started stand-up comedy.
Stand-up. Okay. Wow, okay.
Oh, so, gosh, I feel old. You know, I feel old now that when I have to, like, you know, put your date of birth on one of those online forms, I'm scrolling.
That's when you know, yeah.
Oh, no, three scrolls. I'm ancient.
You feel that age. Oh, so 7 years ago. Wow, okay. So then what sort of rooms were around back then, 7 years ago?
Yeah.
Or did you just go straight to the Comics Lounge?
Well, Comics Lounge was probably my first stand-up gig, yes.
Right.
So that was Tuesdays at the Comics Lounge, which I believe still runs.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Did you do that workshop?
Yes, I did the workshops on Tuesday. I did that. I was in an interesting situation because I'd done other types of performance. I was doing magic at the time.
Magic?
Oh, wow.
I was doing spoken word poetry at the time. I was doing improv. So I was kind of like starting to do stand-up within some of those
amongst
fields. My poems were always funny.
Right.
And then in magic, I was doing some routines at the start of the set.
Right.
And it's like some stand-up and then some magic. And then eventually I faded the magic out. So so I had kind of a transition to comedy rather than a start to comedy.
So you always had an affinity for like performance then, obviously.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So this was a funny thing that I thought of a few months ago. I was in New York and I was with some friends and we were in the subway and there was a busker singing Elvis and I was singing along because when I was 5 years old I used to sing, you know, Elvis at the school fade. I would dress up like that was my
right on.
So even 5 years old I was doing that, and so I haven't sung those songs for that, you know, 24 years. There's my age if you're interested. And so I was singing in the subway and then he pulled me up in, you know, in front of everyone, and I was singing to a whole audience in the New York subway to these Elvis songs. And then I, you know, my friend filmed it, and as I'm putting it together as like a blog, I'm like, I guess I've been doing this stuff forever.
Yeah,
like
right.
So comedy is the, you know, the industry I'm in and the kind of the form, but I've been a little show off forever.
So what, in high school were you the drama kid?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I had the best drama score of year 12.
Of course.
Wow. Little humble brag there.
Go for it. Did you get into top acts? Did you get into top acts then?
I did, actually. Nice. I did that at, what's a theatre in St. Kilda? The National.
Yeah.
The National, I performed my
Your show. Solo? Or
I did my solo performance.
Fantastic.
I forgot that. I guess I was...
Wow.
And I remember because I was opening for Arne Doe a couple of years ago at the National. And so when I went back, I'm like, I guess this is where I've, you know, this is normal.
You've been here.
So even though I'm you know, trying to, you know, achieve things in comedy, it just seems like, this is just who I've always been in some form or another.
So after high school then, what did you want to go to uni?
To uni. Right. I was studying psychology at uni.
Right.
And, but
still had that burning passion for performance.
Yeah, because I was, like, I guess I was in my bedroom learning magic tricks at that time, or I was doing, you know, I was actually rapping a lot.
Right.
Because I couldn't sing. Awesome. So I wanted to write songs, but I couldn't sing, so I rapped. And so I actually visited my parents today and I saw like an old mixtape of mine.
Oh, no way.
And I'm like, oh my goodness, I wonder what's on that thing. No, I haven't. I haven't dared yet.
Oh,
I need to psych myself up for it, I think.
It'd be a good car ride, I think. Yeah. Having that going.
But it's, oh my goodness. But, I wonder if I can remember some of the verses. Probably not. But
do you remember any of the tracks even that you went over?
The titles.
Just, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Are there any good names for some of the songs?
We Aren't Free was one where it's about like
powerful.
The man, you know, yeah. Like,
yep.
You know, we're being surveillance.
You've
got
to stick it to him, you know.
You've got to stick to the man.
That was,
always.
Yeah, anxious 18-year-old me. So, yeah, so it was, so in some form or another, I've been trying to create and perform.
Right.
And that's kind of reflected in my comedy shows now, kind of my festival shows. I sing in them, you know, there's songs in them and I'm dancing at the, you know, and my last show had magic tricks in it. And,
nice.
And so, and there's these stories, I have the storytelling things. So my festival show is pretty eclectic.
Yeah, very.
Which reflects what I've always sort
done.
Of been.
Yeah. So you said you've done comedy for 7 years now and you've done multiple shows. When was your first comedy festival show?
So what's that? 2010 or would have been?
Okay, so you start. You did a comedy festival show in your first year that you said, I'm taking comedy serious.
Yeah, but it was magic. So it was, I was in the comedy festival with a magic show that had sort of jokes in it.
Yeah, for sure.
So I would say, I don't know if we're going to... This is a nerdy comedy show, right?
Yeah,
Or is this a broad...
No, we go in depth.
Oh, we go in depth.
Yeah, we want the nitty gritty.
All right. So I probably would have had a laugh every minute that show. So that's, you know, 50 laughs or something like that. But if you're doing stand-up, like, you should... It doesn't matter. There's no rules. But generally speaking, stand-up, like club-type stand-up is like four to eight laughs a minute type
thing. Right.
But of course, there's variation to that. Yeah. Some people do definitely. Longer setups and whatnot. But when I started, it was predominantly magic with jokes through it.
Yep,
and then it started to... emerge that I did.
Out of that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the first show was called?
Pieces of Mind.
Oh. Wow. Yeah. That's really cool.
It was like mind reading and stuff like that.
Wow. Okay. So how was that? What was the like the turnout for that like?
For the first show.
The first show.
For your first show.
Oh, people wise?
Yeah.
Goodness. So was it the Butterfly Club, which is, I think, 40...
Yeah,
so it was 40 seats back then. It was in South Melbourne.
Yeah,
right.
So this is old Butterfly Club.
Okay.
And, so I think I did pretty well. I mean, I would have sold a 30, 40-seater because they're a nice club. Yeah. They're a performance venue. So they're constantly just pushing their shows, which is really the best place to learn to be nurtured if you want to do your own solo shows or even duos or ensemble shows, because they want you to be good performers. They want you to sell well. They're pushing that. They're not just a room for hire. So the Butterfly Club, in terms of personal development, is such a big deal for festivals. So they're really good. And even just off season, if you know want to do a weekend or something like that, I can't recommend them enough.
Very
they're in the city now, which is an even better location. And they are incredibly supportive. So I did really well there. And I think the next year I did Melbourne Fringe Festival at Trades Hall in 100-seater.
Cool.
And then,
was this the same show or did you
do
a
new
show?
New show every year for the last.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you go to Adelaide Fringe?
Yes,
at all?
I then, did that. Yeah, did I've the... been doing that just as long. So So this is coming up my eighth year at festivals.
Wow.
This will be my eighth show at Adelaide, Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Right.
And Sydney, I've only been doing maybe 2 years. Perth, I've been doing maybe 4 years.
Wow.
Have you noticed a much of a, or what were the biggest differences between a lot of the audiences from state to state, or even carrying further?
Well, it's tricky because I think we sometimes overanalyze these things because an audience can vary so much from night to night from venue to venue and your demographic. Even just this past week, I did an encore of my festival show Sydney. And I had this really sort of youngish, maybe like, 25 to 35 crowd in Sydney at the Comedy Store. And there's just a really explosive crowd. And they were hot crowd and they were laughing at all the cheeky cheeky, like, jokes, probably the lewder jokes in the show. And then I did the Athenaeum on Saturday here. And for some reason, I think it's because it's a theatre, the people who came were much older. They were sort of like 40 plus.
Okay.
So I'm looking at my crowd and going, oh, that's really interesting. A much older crowd.
So they went vibing as well with your material?
They did. They just vibed to different things.
Right.
And they were actually just a bit, they felt like more of a theatre audience. So when they were leaving, I was getting just as much like, that was great, thank you very much.
Yeah. Right.
And as I was thinking, the crowd and people really enjoyed it. And they go, oh, I love the stories and I love that you don't swear that much. Like, it's just, it is a different generation.
Yeah.
And this, you know, I think maybe my performance style is quite broad in the sense that I'd rather entertain anyone. As I think some comics are, well, this is my comedy, and if you don't like it, well, then
I'm not going to change.
And both are fine, and there's room for both, and that's the case with movies. You know, there's art house films, and there's, you know, that sort of thing, broad popcorn films. So
it just makes you a lot easier to book. Like, you can apply for a lot more gigs.
Yeah, well,
especially if you're clean. You said mostly clean.
Yeah, I can be clean. I guess I'm just accessible. I think that's just how I've always been, because I wanted to not, you know, lose work opportunities because I wanted to do this full time very early. So, because I was full time as a magician, and so when I'm was transitioning to comedy, I wanted to be able to still do all my corporate gigs and still do festivals and go for it. But one year I had quite a I guess it's a bit blue. The show was a little bit blue, and also just a bit like highbrow. It was a debate between different parts of myself. You know, first speaker, second speaker, but it was all me. And it was just about masculinity. And I was doing it in Adelaide, and it was a very, very, very broad crowd.
Right.
And I had a couple of walkouts on the first night. Yeah, older women walked out.
That's crazy.
And I just thought, oh, I got to not do that. So I changed my show. Yeah. And broadened it up.
Yeah. Right, okay.
But I know other comics, and certainly there's a friend of mine who had constant walkouts. And also Dr. Brown, who won the Barry, you know, a few years ago, he used to mark them on a sheet when people walked out. He would just and over the season he would have like this big notepad of all the people who, you know, just crossed off of like, you know, 60 people walked out of his shows.
Wow.
But he's brilliant and he's amazing and he's doing what he wants to be doing.
Yeah, that's right.
And we love him extra for doing something that isn't accessible to everyone. So both are valid. I've just been true to myself in like that very broad old school cabaret style, you know, something for everyone entertainment. Yeah.
But so you said, watch the documentary that you did maybe like a year ago?
Oh, yeah. My friend Josh Jansen from Stack Films.
A Day in the Life of a Comedian. And you mentioned in there that you didn't get your first paid gig until 4 years into doing the Comics Lounge.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably my first paid club spot. So I was probably... Yeah, I was still doing like corporates as magic.
Right.
So it would have been my corporate set would have been 40 minutes of magic.
Right.
And then it was 10 minutes of stand-up, 30 minutes of magic.
Right.
So I was sort of transitioning into...
to just stand-up.
To just stand-up. So, and also I think that's probably... maybe it was my first paid gig at the Comics Lounge.
Right.
Because I was definitely doing paid gigs like MC spots around town, and maybe I would have done some paid gigs in Perth. So my first paid gig at the Comics Lounge was 4 years in.
Damn, they gave you a hard go then. 4 years until they're going to book you.
But that's normal for, I think, a club, like a proper club. They have quite a high standard they're selling laughter. They're not selling personality. They're selling
the experience.
They're selling drinks and tempting you in with laughter. But they are people who want those laughs per minute type things. Just make them laugh.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And that's in club owners across you know the world. There are club owners that don't listen to your set. They just listen to the audience laughing, going, they're fine.
Interesting.
So that took about 4 years. But that's, I think in every city, when I travel, even in America, and I do club spots, and there's, you know, the local comic who's on doing a guest spot of 5 minutes at the top of the night, or or maybe hosting, you know, it's taken them 4 years.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So, right. It's about right for club comedy.
Mm. Okay.
Around then. Some of my friends got it sooner, some later. So
yeah. Depends when you get that break. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's time and persistence and, you know, bugging room bookers and constantly going up and, you know.
You mentioned going to America. So when we come back, we're still here with Simon Taylor. Simon was doing some crazy dance moves during that song that we were just watching.
I couldn't believe it.
I couldn't believe it at all. What would you call those dance moves, Simon?
That's just free expression. I couldn't replicate them again. Because if you said do those again, I'd be like, I can't. They're a once in a lifetime thing.
I feel privileged to have witnessed it now.
Very privileged. I'm so glad.
Never happened before, will never happen again.
But it is comes from someone that was in top acts, so you know it's legit.
You know it's legitimate. Marks. The best it
always
could be.
But we were talking about, you're just going to launch into the fact that you were in the US.
Mm-hmm.
So you spent the last 5 years in the US.
On and off, yeah. On and off. Basically, it would have been like my year 5 years ago would have been like 20% of time in the US a year, and then 30%. And then this year, I was probably like there 70% of the year.
Oh, wow. So it was five years ago, was Leno on then?
Yeah, so Tonight Show with Jay Leno was on about 5 years ago.
Yeah, Fallon hadn't taken over yet.
No, not yet. And I went over there and did a gig. I did a stand-up gig at a comic book store in LA.
Wow. Oh, right on.
It was the one gig.
The Melt.
Nerd Melt.
Yeah,
It was at Meltdown Comics, and it was the one gig I could get. Because, you know, it's just so hard to get a spot over there.
Why is that just you just constantly like bugging, booking, you know, people?
Yeah, like booking agents, so.
Just the reach out.
Yeah. I think my friend knew someone who had a show. And so it was a friend of a friend. So it was, you know, cronyism more than anything. And I did an 8-minute set, and a producer from The Tonight Show saw my set. And he said, hey, that was great. Do you want to come to The Tonight Show? I'm like, whoa, I get to watch The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
And so I went to The Tonight Show, and I loved it. It was so showbiz, you know, just the cue cards, and it was everything you imagined Hollywood be, the cameras on the dollies and the cranes, and just it was so classic American showbiz TV, and I'm in awe. And then the show finished and I'm on a high and I'm walking out, and the producer comes to grab me, and he says, no, come back, you're gonna meet Jay.
Oh.
And there was only three or four people who get to meet him after every show.
Do you remember the guests on that the show that you saw?
Santana was the musical guest. Right. Gerard Butler, I think, was the, and Wanda Sykes.
Yeah. Oh, Wanda!
Yeah, nice. So they were the guests that night. And then as I'm sort of standing in line behind a handful of people going up and meeting Jay in the backstage area, the green room, they're all doing the same thing. They're all saying the same thing. They're all like, hey, you know, it was a great show. And he was saying, oh, where are you from? And they're like, oh, we're from Minnesota. And he's like, oh, yeah, I performed up there. You know, that was just like every interaction seemed to be the same. And I just thought, come on, you've only got one chance to do this. Yeah. So I thought I'd just be a smart ass and I don't know. I think it was just that Aussie larrikinism to it.
Right.
And I just said, hey, Jay Leno, I'm going to write for you one day.
Oh,
and he's like, oh, okay, yeah, all right. Well, Chris says you're funny, and you know, like the producer.
Yeah.
And so we go up to the offices, and I'm looking at how the jokes are made, and he's like, send some jokes in. So
he brings you up to the offices.
Yeah, so he brings me up to the offices, and I go through, shows me how they,
What is that like? Just like walking through the halls of like a, you know, studio with Jay Leno, and he's like, yeah, just let me bring you up to my office.
Yeah,
like, what is that feeling like? You know,
well,
just like,
well, as it's happening, it just seems so
surreal.
Afterwards, it felt surreal. But when you're there, it's all very... the offices are just boring, white wall, partitioned offices.
Right.
So, but it's so different to the showbiz of the studio. The studio is lights and sound and cameras, action. But the offices are just like... Yeah, there's, you know, these roofs, there's a little mold here or something like that.
Yeah.
Not that there's any mold at Joy, guys.
No,
that's clean.
Not at all, that's right.
But it's just, you know, it looks like that. And a lot of Hollywood over the last 5 years of writing in different places, it's just a lot like that. It's just office buildings.
Was he making small talk with you on the way to the offices, or is it just like... Like, or was it just you listening to him the whole time?
Well, I was there with the producer and the writers, and he was just, I think he was just being, he was just the nicest guy. He was just so sweet and just like, oh, okay, yeah, send jokes in and we'll get an Australian perspective. And I know Rove and you're, you know, right, that's great. Right. And, you know, because he, I think Rove is a good friend of the show. And,
right.
And
yeah,
so,
that's right, yeah.
So they, so he was just super friendly. And then I went home and I wrote 2 pages of one-liner jokes.
Nice.
About the news that day.
Yep.
And I sent it in, and the next day I had a contract. So
the next day, what a turnaround!
Yeah,
that's insane.
Yeah, it was insane. So,
so did you, you emailed that in to the producer or whatever, and they and the writers, and they're like, "Yep, let's hire this man."
It would have been Jay because Jay, all the jokes go straight to him.
Right. Okay.
So if he didn't like them, he So because there's no writers' room there really.
Right.
Okay. It's just all these. It was sort of modular. There were 12 staff writers, and then there were people who send jokes directly to Jay, but it all went through Jay. So he would just read it, mark the ones he liked.
Yep.
Then that would be whittled down to a certain amount, maybe like a couple of hundred. And then he'd be with his head writer saying, you know, I want these. And the head writer said, yeah, you did a bit. You did, you know, Tom Cruise jokes last week. Right, why don't we ease up on
fresh.
That? Yeah. So that sort of thing. Or they'd have old jokes that they could reuse. So there was that.
They did that? They did that much? Did they do that? Like go back and use old jokes?
And you know, probably. Yeah. I mean, there would have been, there'd be similar points to hit. Like if I don't know, there's only so many times you can say, you know, Kim Kardashian's dumb or something. Paris Hilton's dumb. And
how
and
can we deliver it differently this time?
Yeah. There'll be certain jokes that he'll kind of, you know, reheat.
Right. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
But so how long were you writing for Jay?
About 2 years. So we're still in Australia doing stand-up, and I was sending jokes in. So emailing jokes, email to fax, because he had a fax machine that he'd just pick up all the papers from.
That's awesome. Old school.
And so I did that for about 2 years. And then after that, I wrote for Sean McAuliffe, Mad as Hell. Still rolling, I think. So I worked on that for a year.
What a credit to have, though, for you know, just writing on Leno. Like, I mean, I feel like walk you anywhere. Like, you're walking anywhere.
Yeah, that one's that one changed my life a lot in terms of doing festivals. I will get radio shows, you know, I could actually get on radio and people want to hear this story. Yeah. So that one's helped a lot. And now my challenge is to have a talking point that, you know, surpasses that. And it's a good problem to have in comedy. It's a good problem. It's like, all right, you've achieved something, now you have to achieve something bigger than that, you know. So that's really cool. So I think, you know, I feel like I'm on my way to that with, you know, the ABC special I had earlier this year, and it's going to air on Channel 11 in December. Right, so I've, you know, got stuff that I'm working on that, you know, is the new break. Because, you know, apparently you just kind of have to keep getting different breaks in this industry, you know.
Yeah.
Joan Rivers' documentary I recommend for anyone in
that's
stand-up.
That's a great doco. Yeah.
Because she was 70 or something and she was still looking for another break, trying to get another TV break or something like that and get more work. So she was just an example of someone who would have would have like a wave of success and then it dies down, and doing cruise ships and then have another wave of success doing TV and then it dies down. And then she had a YouTube channel you know, 70s. So she did, and that made me realize of like, oh, I'm living the same life as her now, but just with a lot less money, you know. But I'm still doing, you know, there's just less zeros at the end of my check, but there's still, I'm still doing the same things as her.
Yeah.
Writing jokes.
Fundamentally,
going out, doing gigs, trying to get seen, trying to get attention, trying to build my profile. Mm. And I realized when I watched the documentary, it's like, oh, my life is not going to change practically. Mm. I might have nicer things, you know. I might have might be able to own a home instead of rent a home, or maybe I won't. Maybe I'll just keep renting and traveling. But if this is my career, then it's going to be, you know, this sort of thing, putting on shows, hoping people come
forever,
hating reviews, liking reviews, getting upset at things,
the cycle,
bickering in the scene, gossip, and staying away and going overseas. And this is just going to be, you know, how it is. And hopefully there's family along the way, and hopefully there's, you know, more, you know, your friendships and relationships and all the other parts of your life that are wonderful. But this is the sort of career that I think just suits me. I'd be very hard-pressed to find anything else I'd rather do.
Well, you said you've got something coming out.
Channel 11, my special is airing live at the Enmore. Simon Taylor live at the Enmore in Sydney.
Interesting. Have you got anything else planned upcoming? Any more projects?
My new festival show will start touring Perth.
Yep.
I'll do Perth Fringe, and then I'll do Adelaide Fringe Festival, Canberra Comedy Festival, Brisbane Comedy Festival, Melbourne Comedy Festival, Sydney Comedy Festival.
And it's the same show you're taking around?
It's called, Happy Times.
Okay.
Simon Taylor Happy Times.
Oh.
And
sounds fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's about a pregnancy scare.
Oh.
And it's and it's also just about just the things that make me happiest in life and that feeling of not getting jaded by the good things in your life.
I thought you were going to say not getting pregnant.
Not getting pregnant.
And so this is a new show from last year. You've been working on this show for the last 12 months.
Yeah, not that long. Because, I started working on it maybe like 4 months ago.
Okay, right? Yep.
Because I was still touring my last show,
Spectacular-ish,
up until April.
Wow.
Jeez, okay.
April, probably May, actually. Yeah. Right. So, and then you finish it. It's very hard just to throw all the material out. But I did, you throw it out. So May, June, July, August, September, October, November. So 7 months.
Yeah.
I've been sort of growing it.
Okay.
But it's, I wish I was further along. I'm only about 25 minutes in, but to the show. But I'm going to start doing...
Plenty of time.
Yeah, I'm going to start doing more trials. I did a trial show recently, and so... That went okay.
Right.
You learn a lot from those things, though. You learn a lot, I
feel. Well, it's just setting a deadline. I mean, people say, how do you write a new show every year? It's like, just book the venue, put a poster out, put the name out, and you have to have something ready.
That's right.
That's it.
I feel like a lot of... that can be disastrous, though. That can be disastrous.
Well, it's...
Because what if you don't have a show?
Well, then... Well, you will have a show. Just won't be very good if you're standing on stage.
That's it.
You've heard of it. I've heard of comedians, doing 35 minutes and then, that's all I've got. Yeah. And, it sucks and it feels bad. And, then you push yourself to work harder.
Do
and
better
then,
the next time.
Yeah, so if you're cut out for this, then you should be able to...
Should swim.
Yeah, to just jump in the deep end and try to swim. But there's an optimum level of stress. And when you've got a deadline looming, some people... See, I'm quite a wiry guy anyway. Mm. So I kind of hum away at maybe like, a 6 out of 10 usually.
Right.
So when stress level, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So when I have work to do, it pushes me into 7 and 8, and I'm like, oh God,
it's already the red.
I'm starting to work on my show months earlier.
Yeah, right.
But some people who are like a 2 or a 3 usually are hanging out, and they can go to pubs and hang out with friends throughout the year. They don't get to stress level 7 and 8 until a week before the show's out. You know what I mean? So it's just my general. Like highly strung nature that gets me me working faster.
Quickly, just coming from like writing jokes for for monologues and stuff like that. Mm. So the way you write jokes now is has it changed from how you originally wrote jokes? Are you so much more succinct now with your jokes?
Well, like, I learned joke writing on Twitter. So before I met Jay,
140 characters or less.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, well, not anymore. Sure. That's ruined now.
Yeah,
it's
they've changed
280
it.
Or something
they've
now.
Doubled
really?
It.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Breaking news.
Long-form comedy now.
So. Yeah. I just wrote like 10 tweets a day. And I also just wanted to be on one of those late-night talk shows. And I was lucky I got to do Live on Bowen, which was on Channel 44.
Yep.
Or Channel 31. 31 in Melbourne, 44 everywhere else. So that was, that was always something I wanted to host because I loved Letterman. I loved Johnny Carson. And ironically, I'd never really watched Leno before I was working for it. And,
that's awesome.
But Rove was a big idol of mine.
Yeah,
and I just always wanted that sort of thing. And
You did awesome on Live and Bowen. Like, you do awesome at hosting it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, it was just every skill I've ever developed is suited for that platform.
Yeah.
If you're a host and you have singers and dancers and actors and comedians on and you're one of them, then it's sort of the right environment to have fun and be collectively entertaining on a show like that. So
would you think about pitching something?
Yeah, I mean, I'm constantly doing that, but that's, I mean, it's such a, the TV pitching is such a difficult, long process. It's not only is it an invisible target, you don't know what they're looking for. It's a moving target. What they're looking for is changing. So you could go, hey, I want to do a panel show. They're like, oh, we're sick of panel shows. We've been
got a million
of
them now. Yeah.
You know, you may go in and say, hey, I've got this great game show format. They go, great, we're looking for game show formats. Mm. And then you do it and they're like, well, actually, we're, you know, we've gone with another one. You're like, oh, well, you know, so it's too, there's no clear structure of what is needed and or what people want, and different networks do different things. So, so the joke writing developed on Twitter. I learned how to do monologue jokes because it's just set up punchline. Yeah. Mm. And then when I... So that's a monologue joke. That's very clear. That's like, let's just say what the news is and get a laugh at the end of it. Doing stand-up, I don't write like that at all in stand-up. No. I don't write the jokes beforehand, really. I have dot points of what I want to say.
Interesting.
Yeah. I won't write anything down. I'll just have the dot points and get on stage. And
of the setup?
Or just the topic.
Okay.
So if... I might talk about... So a show from a bit from earlier this year would have been, let's say, I'm trying to pick a good topic let's say gay nightclubs.
Yeah,
the premise is gay nightclubs are the best nightclubs.
Yep.
And so I would just talk about that. I'm like, straight guys, if you haven't been, they're the best. Head down there, like that's the premise. And then I find jokes along the way of, what's fun about them and how you don't have to limit yourself as a man by, you know, saying I'm a straight guy so I can't do these things. Don't limit yourself. So that was the premise, and then I get on stage and do act outs and work out the punchline and there's jokes along the way and that sort of thing. So that's I start with that premise of gay nightclubs are the best, and then I get on stage and start explaining to people why, you know,
it's from that jump point.
So that's one way. And I think in that documentary you saw of me, it's I had that, you know, I had a sinus infection, and that's why
I was going to bring up. You said that you would vow to never use the nasal douche joke ever again.
Yeah.
Did you never used it again?
No, I don't know. Well, I didn't vow. I just didn't, you know.
You're like, I'm never using that ever again.
It's just not. It didn't work. And what was
the last one worked though? Like you completely just changed.
It did work. Actually, that's true. It did work, but it didn't feel right.
Yeah.
What's interesting? And it also didn't have a place in my show.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it would get a laugh, but this is why I wanted people to see that documentary or see that aspect, because there were jokes that we filmed that were good and did work, and they're in my act now.
Right.
But I thought people will see those jokes in the special. They'll see those jokes in the special, and that's so why do I need to show them in the documentary? The documentary is like, look at the stuff that doesn't make it. This is the process. Mm. This is how sausages are made. This is what gets cut off. Some of that, you know, some of those jokes you see in it, that they do well, but they're not the focus. It's the struggle with the ones that aren't doing well.
Yeah.
And when you need it, I did those jokes four times that night to realize, oh, I don't want these.
Right.
It took a long time to draw.
Just chuck it out.
And sometimes it takes weeks, you know, and sometimes you have bits in your show that you only keep because you've continued to do, because you just have always done them, but they're not good. Okay.
Or you just want them to work.
You want them to work. In my encore shows last week of my this year's festival show, I cut a bunch of jokes. I'm like, why did I ever do these?
Right.
And I did them like 70 times over the course of festivals, probably more, 80 or 90. But I just thought, they don't need to be here. They're gone. Really? And they're gone. Oh. And I cut them. But it took me... seven months, you know, after doing festivals to just to go... They don't need to be here. It was just because I was doing them every night.
That you were used to.
That it was a habit more than, And so in that doco, it was just, you know, I did them four times.
Yeah.
And I tried tweaking them and they never felt right. And I'm like, all right, well, they're gone.
Mm.
And that is just as much part of the process as writing a good joke.
That's right. It was a great doco. Absolutely great doco. What was it called? The Day in the Life of a Comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just YouTube that one, everybody. That was a fantastic doco. And also, you and the last spot he hit was Mad Dog. Yeah. So shout out to Mad Dog.
Shout out to Mad Dog.
Fantastic, fantastic room that you that.
It was. Yeah, yeah. I just realized. Yeah. I forgot. It was a blur. All those rooms.
That's what happens at Mad Dog.
Do you ever still go to Mad Dog, or you?
Well, I haven't been in Australia for a little while, so
it's a good excuse.
I was actually thinking if it's still running, I'll head in.
It's on a Tuesday night.
It's on a Tuesday night.
All right. Yeah.
All right. Fitzgerald, yeah. Well, I might head over.
It's always a safe room.
Yeah, we'll see you there one day.
That's right. We'll see you there, Simon. But the special coming out on December
13th.
Fantastic.
On Channel 11. 9:30 p.m.
Awesome. I was going to ask podcasts or anything, but it sounds like you're just busy all the time, Simon.
I like doing video blogs because I like the the medium of film and things like that. I enjoy that. Podcasts, I don't enjoy so much. So I like being on them because it's just, you know, it's a guest spot and you do it once. But I just think the upkeep of having to do a podcast all the time for me personally, because I'm on the road and I'd be doing them alone. Mm. With a friend, I wouldn't mind if I, you know, had someone I could regularly do podcasts with. But anyway, that's a long answer to no.
No, that's fantastic.
But where can people get you on the Facebooks, the Twitters,
The
Instagrams?
So most things, I am Mr. Simon Taylor, M.R. Simon Taylor. That's on Twitter and Instagram, or just Simon Taylor on Facebook. I got a public page and things like that.
Awesome.
Or go to my website, MrSimonTaylor.com. I got a mailing list. I'm trying to push the mailing list before, you know, neutrality is ruined and it costs $800 to be. So I'll just send you an email with my gigs.
Just give out your mobile phone number right now, and everyone can hit you up on that. But thank you so much for coming.
It's easy enough to contact me anyway. I don't even need the phone number.
But thank you so much for coming down, Simon. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.